You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Tuesday edition. I'm going to do a two-part show. This will be part one and probably will continue into the Wednesday show. And it's about health care, health insurance, and what the Senate is and the House of Representatives, both controlled right now by the Republican Party, is trying to do. And the best way to describe it, well, let me back up a minute. I need to at least set the stage to you understand where I'm coming from. I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a Democrat. If you ask me, well, what's your political philosophy, I would say I'm a classical liberal. I believe very much in limited government, representative government, constitutional government. That's not been very popular in the last 125 years. And what I mean by that, 125 years ago, the size of the federal government was about 3% of the economy. And really, as late as the 1920s, it was still very small. Now, government at all levels is over a third, depending on various estimates. And I'm talking local, county, state, and federal. The federal piece is around, and it bounces around, 18 to 20% has gotten as high as 24%. Now, what happens? Over that 125-year period, both political parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and there are many parties, but those are the two dominant parties that get elected. Oh, occasionally a socialist will get in, an independent will get in. But if you really want to make a career in politics, you had only two choices. You could become a Democrat and a Republican. And yes, there's been migration, especially out of the Democratic Party into the Republican Party, especially of Southerners in the 70s. So many Southern politicians left the Democratic Party because they could not abide the national ticket. What's happened to both parties, though, is they've moved further to the left, and that doesn't tell you much other than they wanted bigger and bigger government. They wanted to expand the size, the role, the scope of government. Their answers to any problem in society was a government program, a new law, a new regulation, a new tax. And as you made the size of government bigger, it needs to be paid for. And the way government is paid for, there are really only three ways. One is tax you, and that's the preferred method. The second is to borrow money, and the third way is to print money through the Federal Reserve System or central bank. And we're using all three because now we're running massive deficits every single year. As a classical liberal, I believe in fiscal responsibility, financial responsibility. The federal government must live within the means of the American people. But they have long ago exceeded that. In the past, the only time, really, that the government borrowed a lot of money was in time of war. Whether it was the Civil War, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam War, and on, it is in times of war that the government needs to borrow money, a lot of money, to pay for it. But now we routinely borrow money to pay the bills. Keep in mind, an individual can't do that. A family can't do that. Now, they'll try. Some people have gotten in financial trouble by using credit cards. and getting multiple credit cards with credit limits. But when you apply for those cards, they look at your income. What they look at is your ability to pay at least the minimum payments and ideally pay it off. Now, they want customers that don't pay their bills promptly because they earn a lot of money on that. Keep that in mind. But eventually, the party's over for them. Because at some point in time, the banker will say, who's issuing the card, or whoever's issuing the card, we can't increase your credit line, nor are we going to issue a card. And you can try to get a card from, and many people have multiple cards. I'm well aware of this. But eventually, it catches up to you. And should you lose your job, you're in financial trouble. Well, the United States is way beyond that point. But you wouldn't know it listening to the politicians. They seem to be oblivious of the constraints that individuals have to live by, families have to live by, local governments, school boards, counties, states have to live by. See, they can't print money and they can't go in the debt. Now, they do borrow money, but they have to pay it back. They can do two things. They can either tax, and that's what's happened. They've increased taxes, found new taxes, borrowed money, but at some point people won't lend. It can be a city, a county, a state, for the simple reason they're a risk. Investors want a risk premium when your ability to pay off the bonds or however you're financing this. And if they evaluate you and downgrade you, we have credit agencies that give ratings. Again, the party can be over. And we have states in the news. For example, Illinois is in serious problems, but so is California and there are other states. I mention this because a key tenet, principle of conservatism, as well as classical liberalism, is prudence. You want to be prudent. And in the government sphere, that means financially responsible. It means balanced budgets. What it doesn't mean is year in, year out, running massive deficits. Individuals, families can't do it. Businesses can't do it. Cities can't do it. Colleges can't do it. Schools can't do it. Charitable institutions can't do it. Churches can't do it. Because if you do it, what happens? You fail. You go bankrupt. You're out of business. You're at one time, you'd be in the poorhouse. We don't have that anymore. And that's what you have to keep in mind. Now, what does this have to do with healthcare? Obamacare was the shorthand name, and I'll use Obamacare, but it really, its full name was the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. The irony is it doesn't protect patients, and it's certainly not affordable. We're not set up to take calls, but I listen to a lot of talk radio. If we were set up for calls, I could go for hours and hours of hours, people telling their stories as what's happening to the premiums. And they'll start by saying, at one time, I could afford my health insurance, and now I can't. The deductibles are 3 to 5 times what I'm used to. And they're forcing me to include in my plan benefits that I don't need. What they're saying is, I like the system, health insurance system, the way it was. Now, I quickly need to make a couple of points, some basics here. Most people today get their health insurance coverage through their employer. This is very much somewhat of an accident of history, but I'll spend a minute on it. During World War II, the government intervened in the economy, and that's a recurring theme. What's going on, and it happens especially in times of war, times of crisis, the government intervenes into the economy, and they did it by wage and price controls. They would not let free market, the free enterprise, market capitalist system work. They thought they knew better. They reverted to a command and control economy with the government dictating prices and wages. It never works out. It's failed repeatedly. But it's an early example of government intervention into the economy. I emphasize that because we have two political parties today. I call them the bigs. Big interventionist government parties. The two-party tyranny. Now, what happened during World War II as a result of that government dictate that you couldn't increase either the wages of labor or the prices someone was meant for the goods and services. The only way firms, businesses producing goods and services could attract labor, and they needed labor because many of the men were off to war, over 10 million. So the women, as well as the men that were left in the economy, in the labor market, to attract them, they couldn't increase their wages, but what they could offer them was a benefit, health care benefits, and that's what happened. Now, it doesn't mean the government created this. It was Blue Shield, Blue Cross that were the innovators. It was the private sector that came up with these plans originally. But that was the start that's continued through today, where businesses, employers can, and most do. The only ones that really don't are new businesses and people that are in financial trouble. I have a lot of experience in that. I used to sell a lot of group health insurance to businesses, some individual coverage, and I'll get to that in a minute, as well as investments and retirement plans. So I know a little bit about this from the practical side. And one of the first benefits employers offer their people is group health insurance, provided they can afford it. So if you're a new startup company, usually initially they can't do it. But if they're successful and the money's rolling in, that's one of the very first benefits they will offer. Why? They have to compete in the labor market for employees. It's not that they're mean or generous. It's competition. And that's what I want to underline. You want competition, not only in the labor market, but for goods and services, including health insurance. The worst thing we could have would be single payer where the government has the monopoly. Then there's very little, and I would say no incentive, to keep prices down. What you want is competition. Many people competing with consumers. I'm a big advocate of consumer sovereignty. The consumer is king. And if you want to be successful in this country, offer a good service that's competitively priced. It's affordable, truly affordable, not this nonsense, this switch and bait. And that's what Obamacare was. It was designed to fail. Keep that in mind. Why? What at its core, what was it doing? It was forcing government coercion. It was forcing people to buy health care insurance. Now, keep in mind, most people have it through group insurance. And there were mandates that groups of a certain size had to have it. But the individual mandate, if you didn't have it through your employer, whoever your employer was, a business, a school, a college, a charity, church, county, state, whoever you work for, if they didn't provide it, most people, especially when they're married and have children, one of the first things that they want and are looking for is what? Health insurance to pay the bills, especially the large bills, should they have an event that causes them to incur a lot of cost, mainly hospital stays, surgeons, doctors, and therapists, all together, healthcare providers. The bills can add up really quick, and that is the big concern of people that do the responsible thing and have health insurance. I'm a big advocate of having health insurance, but I think, like any good and service, you should buy your own. You can do it today, but I wouldn't recommend it. I used to be asked all the time, well, what would you recommend if I were an individual? I would say, get the highest deductible you can. And I don't mean $100 or $500 or even $1,000. I mean several thousand. The higher, the better. Now, why? The insurance companies pool risk, but they also do not want to handle, because it's expensive, the small claims. So they want clients that have high deductibles. It's just like automobile insurance. Most people have at least a $500, if not $1,000 deductible. And the reason they have it is to get the auto insurance down, and the same applies to health insurance. Now, many people, I would say the majority of Americans, live paycheck for paycheck. They don't have much in savings. And that's largely due, I think, to not only our tax system, but our so-called social insurance, which is not social insurance. It's you're coerced into Social Security and Medicare. You don't have a choice. They will take it out of your pay. And then I would say, make sure you're dealing with a reputable company that pays its claims. And that's not hard to find out who they are. They're rated as well. There's some excellent companies. And it was then a very competitive market. But you want catastrophic coverage that pays for those 100,000, million, or several million dollar claims. How likely Will you collect any benefits on that? I would say, ideally, I don't want to collect any of the benefits. Because if I'm collecting benefits, I have some serious medical problems. I might not live, but that's what I would do. And then save money, put aside money to pay for your routine doctor visits. Just like you don't get insurance to change the oil in your car, to put gasoline in your car. That's ridiculous. Well, there are a lot of small medical, small in terms of dollar amount, procedures, a broken arm, a sprained wrist, on and on, that you should save money for and pay. Is that the system we have? No, not really. Because what happens is people become used to the fact that their medical insurance that is provided, especially for if you're working for a good company that has to compete, has coverage. They may have a low deductible. What happened over time that I was in the industry, businesses understood gradually, went from 100, 250, 500, 1,000 and up in terms of the deductible. Why? To keep the cost of the premiums down. Not hard to understand. This is not rocket science. Now, there's a big difference, and I'm going to get back to the Senate bill in a minute, but I always have to lay this out. Insurance is fundamentally a pooling of risk. There are many people in a group that will have either no claims or very few claims, and the very few claims are typically the annual physical. They're healthy. They stay healthy. Doesn't mean they might have a cold or a flu, and they might go to the doctor, but even if they do, it's a small bill. And again, depending on the deductible, the copay arrangements, you're paying for it. Because even if you're on a group plan, you have a deductible. You have to pay those dollars first, up front 100%. Then you get into the so-called copay range. Typically, it's 80-20, where you pay 20% and the insurance company pays 80% up to a dollar figure, such as $5,000 or $10,000. It depends on the plan. Could be lower, could be higher. And then after, let's say you have a big bill, then you're in the area where the insurance company pays 100%. And then most plans had annual limits, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, or unlimited. There are some plans that were unlimited, a lifetime benefit. Those are the better plans, but it's more expensive, even though it's very, very unlikely you're going to have those major claims. But that's something to at least look at. And it does give a certain amount of comfort that it's unlimited. That, in a nutshell, is how group insurance works, but you're going to have some people that have very few claims, if any, and you're always going to have one or more, depending on the size of the group, that has health issues. Many of them are chronic. They have their first heart attack, first stroke, first diagnosis of cancer, and other serious conditions. And much of the claims will be with those few individuals that have those health problems. And once they have those health problems, that's called a pre-existing condition. Now, what you need to understand with group health insurance, it's not medically underwritten. You get the insurance or are eligible for the insurance because you work for the employer, whoever that is. Could be the government. It could be your college, your school, your local business. The larger the pool, they spread the risk. And there were differences between small group, and I did a lot of small group, 2 to 9, medium size, and then very large groups, because your largest corporations typically self-insure. They might have insurance for huge bills, but most of the very biggest corporations, they self-insure, and the health insurance company is just administering the plan. But that's a detail. The important thing is it's not medically underwritten. You're enrolled. You decide whether you want to enroll, because sometimes you have a husband and wife, and one of the spouses has better coverage. And maybe they have better coverage and the employer pays for it all, and the other employer doesn't have the better coverage, pays for the employee but doesn't pay for the spouse or the children. There are a lot of variables here, but it's not hard to see which is the best way to go. That's where the majority of the American people have their health insurance coverage. And it's very much an accident of history. Do I think it's ideal? No. Why? Everybody has their preferences for certain services. Obviously, if you're newly married, maternity is very, very important to you. Others that are older, maternity is not of interest at all. And many people simply can't have children. Some by choice, some intentionally. It always struck me as strange. Why is the employer doing this? Now, I've given you the history. I know why. Because they don't give you your clothes. They don't give you your food. They don't give you your housing. You know, the days of the company town have long passed. It's your responsibility, the individual's responsibility, to spend his paycheck wisely, to buy food, to provide shelter for himself and his family. And yes, to buy insurance. Employers don't offer auto insurance or homeowners insurance. Why are they offering health insurance? What we should have and we don't have, and it's mainly because of the tax laws, the 1954 Tax Act, major reform, continued, and it's continued up to today, that what employers pay for health insurance is an allowable deductible business expense. But more importantly to the individual, the value of that, and it costs money, we're talking thousands of dollars today, is not considered income to the person receiving the benefit. It is income, but it's not included as part of your taxable income. So there's a distinct advantage to working for employers that offer health insurance. And that's what I would tell someone that's really concerned about this and wants a good plan that offers benefits and a wide choice of doctors and hospitals that at one time you could have, not anymore. The majority of the American people get it through group insurance, get their coverage, and we're happy with it, satisfied with it. In addition, you have people that, mainly self-employed people, but individuals, that were not covered, did not work for a large corporate, did not work for an employer that offered it. So what did he or she have to do? She had to buy, or he had to buy, an individual plan. Now, individual plans are medically underwritten. At least they were, not anymore. You had to ask a series of questions. Just like if you buy life insurance, they ask you a series of questions, both health questions as well as what type of activities are you engaged in. Like, do you like to jump out of airplanes and parachute or hang gliding? There are certain risky occupations. I think one of the riskiest is being on a fishing boat. And I think you can understand why. So individual coverage used to be medically underwritten. They would ask you health questions. Have you had a heart attack? Have you had a stroke? Had you have cancers? There's a long list. I'm not going to go over it. Now, why did they ask that? Well, first, when you get individual coverage, you can get it for yourself, your spouse, and your children. It's not just for an individual, although it's called individual coverage. And there were some very good companies, at least then. Many exited when Hillary Care was being talked about. I remember a story. Well, I'll relay the story. I saw a 2.5-page list of companies that got out of the individual market. They were afraid of what Hillary Care ultimately didn't pass, thank God. But a lot of companies withdrew from the market, as they did with Obamacare, even more so, in the group market as well. Now, why I'm mentioning that, you want competition. You want consumers to have a range of plans that are catered to the customer. I always like to compare it to buying a car. There are some people that price is no object. Now, I know we all like bargains, but they want the best car they can get with all the bells and whistles, all the options, and they're willing to pay for it. But most Americans are not in that position. There's a whole range of alternatives out there. And that's what you want. And there's competition. Toyota, Honda, General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, Mercedes. And there's also competition amongst dealers. And there's some good dealers. Well, there's a few bad dealers, but many of them know they want repeat customers. They want to treat you right. There's always going to be in any industry, as well as government, is the rotten apples, sharp business practices. And that's where you hear the horror stories. But there's actually many, many more. I would say between 80 and 85, maybe 90%, that want to do the right thing, want to do right by the customer because they know they want that repeat business and they want to maintain your car and they want a good experience. That's human nature. And when you're talking a large ticket items such as a car, they're spending a lot of money and most people have to make payments. Now, the same thing applies to health insurance. And now it's a very large dollar amount. I was listening to some talk radio. Some lady called and said, my health insurance premium. Now, it's a family of I think, 8 people. They have a lot of children. She said, my health insurance premiums are more than my mortgage payment. And that's the calls that I'm hearing. They can't afford their health insurance anymore. They've been priced out of the market because of what? Government intervention, government interference in the free enterprise market capitalist system. By who? I call them the collectivist. There's several adjectives here, but the broad category is collectivist. But when you drill down a little, they're progressives. They truly believe that government is the answer to society's problems. We need another government program. We need another law, another regulation, another tax to address society's needs. They want to make you dependent upon government. What they're about is power and keeping power. And the way they keep power, I call it Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you some free stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no such thing as free stuff. Don't be a sucker. Remember what President Obama said. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And oh, by the way, a family of four should expect lower premiums by about $2,500 a year. Now, I'm relaying that to warn you. One way to spot a progressive, I call them the lying lunatic left. Why do I call them lying? They have to lie to you to convince you to vote for them, and they suck you in by promising you things that they know up front they can never deliver. Eventually, the truth comes out. The core problem today in American politics is the American people can't trust either political party because again and again and again, they're lied to, they're misled by Democrats and Republicans, senators and representatives. That's the biggest disconnect. The people are now truly disconnected from their so-called representatives. The representatives are largely rented or bought and paid for by the donor class, the people that run and own this country and make the big campaign contributions. And because both parties have been getting away with lying to the people, deceiving them for so long, they think they can continue doing it again and again. And they're right. Let me just say something. They're right. Unless the American people rebel. Now, I'm not talking a violent rebellion. I'm talking a peaceful rebellion. But if you fundamentally want change, want hope and change, you're not going to get it with the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. Not change for the best, for the worst. They're both big interventionist government parties. Where are we at now? The United States today is no longer a representative republic. It's an empire. That's why the United States today is a warfare and welfare state. We have nearly $20 trillion, $20,000 billion in debt. And that's the tip of the iceberg because we have unfunded liabilities, mainly for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That's over $200 trillion, 10 times the national debt, that is growing larger and larger and larger. Eventually, this house of cards collapses and we become Greece. We're not Greece yet. We have, unfortunately, less and less time to reverse these trends. But remember, the trend has been going on for 125 years. It started with government less than 3%. Under Obama, it got as high as 24%. It was knocking on the door, 25% of the whole economy, the federal government, in terms of spending. And that doesn't include local, state. Now, what has happened over those years? At one time, usually the man, the husband, could support a family if he had a decent paying job and did support the family. And the woman, the mother, stayed home, cared for the kids, cared for the house, cooked the meals, and the family would be comfortable. No longer is that the case. Because as governments got bigger and bigger and bigger, taxes increased. Oh, the rates have gone up and down, up and down, up and down. But when you consider the tax burden, property taxes, largely for schools, sales taxes for the states, income taxes in many states, not in Texas, but in most states, a slew of fees And on top of that, you add the federal taxes. Many people today are working 6-7 months of the year for who? The government. You see, it's a terrible price to pay when you allow your representatives to grow the size, the scope, and the role of government. And that's what's happening. The Democrats are doing it, and the Republicans are doing it. Now, I have made it clear that I don't support what's going on in Washington, D.C., but I don't have a political party anymore to vote for. I initially was what is described as a traditional conservative. I believed in fiscal responsibility. I believed in a strong national defense. I wanted limited government. But in all the years that I've been voting, there was only one president that I thought was truly a conservative as well as a libertarian, and that was Ronald Reagan. And he wasn't perfect. Since Goldwater ran and he was trounced, LBJ beat him bad. And because of that, ever since, the Republican Party really wants nothing to do with conservatives and libertarians. And I need to remind you, because a lot of people, and I fell into this trap. I voted for the candidate. My approach to voting was very simple. I was going to vote for the candidate that best reflected my political philosophy. I wasn't married to the Republican or Democratic Party. Not at all. If I followed my family, they were all Democrats. I'm from New York City. They were all Democrats. And it was very much a class thing. You know, I've heard the remark once. I've heard it a number of times. Well, Republicans are not our type of people. The Democratic Party is for the little man. Maybe in the 1950s and 60s, but no longer. And I really think it never was, because the Democratic Party was the party of segregation and Jim Crow laws. Don't forget that. But what has happened to the Republican Party? Just like the Democratic Party, it has come out for more and more government programs. They do emphasize they have different priorities. That's only to be expected. No one is going to agree with anyone 100%. But they've forgotten some principles. And one of the principles is financial responsibility or fiscal responsibility. And one indicator of that is, do they balance the budget? Well, we almost never balance the budget. And even when we do, we're playing games. You want total expenditures. I'm not going to get into the weeds on this. We can't continue to do what we're doing. And neither political party will confront this. They're in deep denial. And what they're doing is what they're doing is going to collapse. Now, when? I don't know. I'm not in the estimating, guessing game. My crystal ball is no better than yours. But anyone that truly knows the situation knows you can't keep doing this. Eventually, investors will demand a much higher risk premium to buy government bonds, government securities, treasury securities. And they have been manipulated by the Federal Reserve. They're truly not market determined. We have financial repression going on. And who gets hurt? Savers get hurt. People on fixed incomes get hurt. Go to your bank and see what you can get on a CD. Not much. Oh, the banks took care of themselves, even when they were reckless. So what are we going to do about it? Continue to vote Democrat and Republican, it's not going to work. Down that road, like I said, no hope, no change. What the Senate bill, as well the House bill, is a betrayal of who? First and foremost, loyal Republican voters. It doesn't matter whether they were conservative Republicans, liberal Republicans, or moderates. Initially in the 60s, and I was a big supporter of Goldwater, couldn't vote, but I was a supporter. And many people became conservatives by reading his book, The Conscience of a Conservative. That message resonated with me. And if you talk to many older conservatives, they too, let's say they found religion. But Barry Goldwater was soundly defeated. Not surprising, because the Republican Party then, and really I would say today, is largely controlled by an elite, a small group, mainly on the East Coast. Then they were called Rockefeller Republicans, after Nelson Rockefeller. Today they're called Rhino Republicans, Republicans in name only. I have a name for them. I call them rollover Republicans. The Democratic Party says rollover, and the rollover Republican says how many times? And this so-called draft bill of the repeal of Obamacare and replacement of Obamacare is a good example of rollover Republicans. See, the Republican Party has never been a conservative party. It never has been. And it certainly has never been a classical liberal party or a libertarian party. It just hasn't been. And over that 125-year period, why at one time was for limited government, was for financial responsibility, believed in prudence, believed in a constitutional republic. The Constitution today, sad, and it is sad, is more or less a dead letter in many, many respects. See, at one time, presidents wouldn't approve spending bills because it didn't comply, articulate with the Constitution. Not anymore. They don't really care what the Constitution says. They'll pass spending bills for anything. Now, I want to quickly say, what am I for regarding Obamacare? See, I have a memory, and with the internet, it's not very hard. Mitch McConnell, from Kentucky, Republican, prides himself in being conservative. At least he talks conservative, let's put it that way. And there's a lot of respect there amongst establishment Republicans. But he's lost the respect of who? Republican voters. Maybe not in his state, but I will tell you, if you listen to talk radio, they don't care much for Mitch McConnell anymore. They think he should go, and he's been there over 32 years, and that's another problem. Initially, I wasn't for term limits. Today, I think they're absolutely essential because most of that leadership has been there 20, 30 years or more, and many of them will die in office. That's not healthy. The founders envisioned people spending a few years in the House and the Senate and then returning to whatever occupation they had prior to entering. Not today. Today we have very much career politicians, and that is another part of the problem. We need term limits. But both parties are promoting big government. This is what I call both the House and the Senate bill are fake repeal and fake replacement because most of the subsidies continue. Does that mean there are not some aspects to the bill that I approve of? Of course they are. Now, they'll say, well, it's very complicated. That's the line that McConnell is repeating. Well, this is very complicated. See, I can remember not too long ago, we're going to pull by the roots, root and branch, repeal Obamacare. That was the slogan, the message when they were running for re-election. Now that it's come time to do it, they're not doing it. I think that's called hypocrisy. I'm not going to be diplomatic. It's called lying, misleading the people. You see, it comes down to trust. When you don't tell the truth, doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican, and the people catch on, they don't want to listen to you anymore. Frankly, my policy is if I find someone is consistently lying to me, I don't want to associate with them. I certainly don't want to do business with them, and I'm not going to vote for them. And that's the situation that the Republican Party, whether in the House and the Senate, are at right now. They're not fooling the American people. They might think they are in their bubble in Washington, D.C., but the voters, especially the Republican base, know it. They're upset. They're outraged. And what the Republican Party is doing in the Senate and the House, it has a name, bait and switch. Bait and switch. I also call it betrayal of their own voter base. Shame on them. And then we have some of the propagandists. I call it Republican radio. I usually get up fairly early. I used to listen to Bill Bennett when he was on. A Democrat for many, many years. I understand. He's from New York City, he's a Catholic, and he was a Democrat for many, many years before he became and worked for Ronald Reagan, first the Secretary of Education, the department should have been abolished, and then worked for President Bush as drug czar. But he's a good example of a big government conservative, in this case, a big government neoconservative. Well, he decided to retire, and I was a fairly loyal listener. I wanted to hear what the big government conservatives were trying to sell. I knew it was propaganda. He knew it was propaganda, but he had a warm, fuzzy feeling. He had a very good, loyal audience, even when they disagreed with him. He was replaced by Hugh Hewitt. Now, I normally don't talk about other hosts, but I got a little upset with Hugh Hewitt. I almost called him up. I used to do that. I don't have time anymore. He was going after who? The six senators that are not supporting the Republican establishment. Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz. I think it's Heller, Johnson. I'm missing one. Oh, yes, Susan Collins. What do those senators have in common? Well, Susan Collins is the lowest. I put a lot of credence to Conservative Review. They have a scorecard. And I actually have at the very bottom, and let me say this before I forget. For new listeners, the way you listen to this show is go to my companion blog, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photograph at the very top, you'll have links to the most recent shows. And then under that, you'll have some of my show prep. Not all. I could not put all my show prep here. And I put a lot of videos this time for background. And you really, if you're really new to this, you need, if you have time, I know a lot of people don't, listen to some of those videos, especially those by Milton Friedman. I think they will open your eyes. Oh, yes, he's a libertarian for limited government, would downsize the federal government. We're more or less on the same page there. But he had, I don't know if I've included this in my notes. Why don't we have fundamental tax reform? Very simple. The politicians don't want it. That's how they get their campaign contribution. See, I'm a big fan of the fair tax, my version of it, fair tax less. But equally, you could say, that's why we're not getting Obamacare repealed and replaced. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're a Republican, and I was for many years, I really had no choice. I look at the Democratic candidates, I said, my God, I couldn't vote for them. And many times the Republicans weren't that much better. But over 10 years ago, I gave up on them because they weren't responsible. They weren't prudent. They weren't addressing pressing issues. The big issue today in my mind is government spending is out of control. And neither the Republican Party, the Democratic Party are really doing anything about it. Oh, I know the games they play with their budgeting process and, oh, we're going to cut $1 trillion over 10 years. It never happens. And the deficits keep piling up. The debt keeps piling up. And the unfunded liabilities are growing to the sky. They're not responsible. I don't even consider them adults. These are the people who we're supposed to respect. They're not conservative. They're not libertarian. They're not classical liberals. They're big interventionist government politicians. The D and the R tells you very little, other than the D's like the welfare state part and the R's like the warfare state. And they'll go on and on and on. We need to increase defense spending, defense spending. Well, I'm for a strong national defense, but I'm not for militarism and going into country after country. They seem to forget the financial situation we're in. They never really talk about it unless someone questions them. We're going to be policemen of the world. We're going to spread democracy. We're going to nation build. How did that work out? I'll tell you, it doesn't work out at all. And now they promise to repeal it. It's not hard to do. You know, McConnell said, oh, this is complicated. Well, let me uncomplicate it for you. I think I can do it in two sentences. Now, the lawyers will take 10 pages to do the two sentences. And I understand I used to negotiate contracts with attorneys. I'm not an attorney, but big-time negotiator. We're talking big dollar figures here. I say that because some people are impressed with people that have JD after their name. I'm not. Oh, some of them are very articulate, I'll be the first to say, and they will give you their opinions. But Hewitt went after the conservatives as well as Heller. For some reason, I haven't even checked him out. I'm unfamiliar with him. But I have this scorecard, and that's what I'm scrolling down. See, Susan Collins, Republican, represents Maine, liberal. On the Conservative Review, doesn't surprise me, she has an F, 12%. An F with 12%, that's where the Democrats are. Lamar Alexander, you probably have heard that name, respected in Tennessee, 17% F. Murkowski, 22% F. Arkansas. Those two ladies were sitting right next to Donald Trump in his meeting. You catch that? Do you think that was accidental? And not too far from him was Orrin Hatch from Utah, 31%. Wow, we're getting up there. Still an F. I'm looking for Heller. I wonder, oh, here he is. Lindsey Graham, yes, a neocon, 33%, an F. And right below him, his good buddy from Arizona, John McCain, an F, 33%. I guess they're vote together. Now, here's the one that John Cornyn. Now, many of you might say he's conservative. He's not. He's an F at 40%. Now, I'm not going to go down the list. The last one will be Mitch McConnell, you know, conservative Republican. Don't you believe it? 42%, an F. Been there 32 years, up for re-election in 2020. Now, I'm looking for a Heller, and I don't know who he is. I've heard the name, but I really know nothing about him, and I admit that, and I should have done a little prep. And let me say, there's some good people here, but they're not conservative, and that's the point I'm trying to make. They're not for limited government. They're not conservative, and they are unprincipled because they're not balancing the budget. They don't really care. They don't care about you and me. They don't care about individuals and families. The havoc this has caused, Obamacare is a disaster. And it was designed to fail so they could get to single payer. And my suspicion is that's exactly what the Republicans are doing. They're going along with this. Oh, yes, here he is from Florida, Marco Rubio. We're in the C range. Now, many people like Marco Rubio, and at least initially I did. But he changed his tune on immigration once he got there. The Gang of Eight, he sold out. And that's the problem. The longer they're there, the quicker they sell out. Some sell out the first year. Now, here's a gentleman that I'm really impressed with, Tom Cotton, but he's 79% a C. Where do you get the A's? Tim Scott, South Carolina, 90%. Black Republican. Rand Paul, A, 92%. Benjamin's, I'm not going to read them all. I don't have time. But Cruz is 97%, and Mike Lee is 100%. There's a reason why I went over this. The Republican establishment is attacking on the radio, and you better believe in Washington, D.C., the conservatives, the people that believe in free enterprise market capitalism, the people that believe in a representative republic under a constitution. It's the big government crowd, the establishment that has betrayed the American people, that is now attacking conservatives, libertarians, classical liberals. The hell with them. That's why I say it's not going to change. This has been the way of the Republican Party as long as I voted Republican. I gave up on them. And it's increasingly difficult to tell the difference between the two. Oh, they played the game where we need a good Supreme Court judge. I understand that. But we're talking about a pocketbook issue that's hurting Americans and they can't repeal it? It's easy to repeal. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, together with regulations, mandates, taxes, and expenditures relating thereto or pursuant thereto, is hereby rescinded. One sentence. Now, yes, call in the lawyers and sharpen it up. That's what the Republican base wants, a clean repeal. Why do you need a clean repeal? You need to get the premiums to go down. And the only way, especially in the individual market, the only way you're going to do that, you got to get back to medical underwriting, which means if you have a pre-existing condition, you're not going to get covered. Now, if the states and the federal government want to set up a separate fund and subsidize them, make the case. But when you mix government subsidies with insurance, you no longer have insurance. And that's exactly what the Democrats want. Because if the Republicans do this, the Republican replacement will also fail because you get adverse selection. In other words, the people that are sick and older are going to buy the insurance. You better believe they're going to buy the insurance. And the young people and the healthy people are not going to buy it. It'll just fail a couple of years down the road. What the American people want is to get back to the system prior to Obamacare, where there weren't subsidies. If you want health insurance, if you want really health care, medical care, get a job. Work for a company that offers benefits. If that's your major concern, I'm not saying you have to, but if you want to be responsible, that's what you need to do. It's not the government's responsibility to pay for your health insurance or your health care. Now, I'm somewhat compassionate. There are truly needy people out there that can't work. They have no income. They're on welfare, and their plan is Medicaid. But the problem is people are taking advantage of Medicaid, disability, and there's no work requirements. And I know the bill has work requirements. Remember welfare reform where we put in work requirements? Most of that has gone by the boards with President Obama. It needs to be brought back. But the Republican voters, the American people, are expecting the Republican Party to repeal it. Now. It should have been done before the 4th of July. It wasn't done because we have these Fs, Ds, and even C Republicans that are really supporting Obamacare by continue the subsidies. They're not listening to the American people. Now, they will listen election time when, if the Republicans are smart, will primary every single SOB in the House and the Senate that double-crossed, betrayed the American people and the Republican voters. This is a con. This is a bait and switch. It's fraud. They're lying to you. They're deceiving you. And they're intentionally doing it. And they think they can get away with it. And I truly think Donald Trump supports the House and the Senate bill. Because he was for single payer. And this is designed to ultimately get to single payer. That's the little game both parties are playing. They can't come out and say it. Well, the Democrats will say it. They don't have it. They make no bones. That's what they want. But they didn't have the votes for it. And you better believe any Republican worth his salt is not going to be for single payer. But that's what they're trying to do. Design it to fail. The Democrats designed it to fail, and the Republicans are repeating that mistake. And if Ted Cruz, Rand Paul should double cross us, or Mike Lee, I don't think they are. I think they're men of integrity. But we're watching them too. We've had it up to here with liars, deliberately deceiving the voters. They had vote after vote after vote on repealing it. And now when it's time to do it, they mess it up. Give me a break. Not anymore, because what's happening is more and more Americans are leaving both political parties. And that's what I look forward to, because we need to replace really both of these parties, because they're both big interventionist government. That ends part one. I'll have more to say in the next show. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.